Rabbi Jason Kimmelman Block is Washington Director of Bend the Arc Jewish Action. Thank you for being with us today.
Thanks so much, Paul. Great to be here.
So maybe you can just set us, set the stage a little bit. Like, what do we know about the current state of the rise of anti-Semitism? Let's get as specific as we can so we know what we're really talking about. What are the numbers that you might have, and what are the ways that you're seeing it manifested that we should be paying special attention to?
Yeah, absolutely. It's important that you begin with the numbers because the whole conversation about numbers is actually a fairly complicated one. Sometime, hopefully in the next few weeks, we're expecting hate crimes data to come out from the FBI, and they track data over time. And the fact is the data is really, really hard to get a finger on in terms of just hate crimes data. Hate crimes data is classically and structurally underreported. Some police departments and some states even report zero hate crimes in their jurisdiction. So there are efforts. The Tabora Higher Hate Act, which was passed a little over a year ago, is seeking to rectify some of those issues. But there's also an issue where the hate crimes is tracked by police. And so there are many groups that are victims of hate crimes that may not feel safe going to the police. And so Jewish community is multi-ethnic and multiracial and is predominantly white. And so, you know, white people in this country are taught that police keep you safe. And so we're a little more likely to report hate crimes. But what we're certainly seeing over the past at least 5 or 6 years is increasing violence towards Jewish communal institutions, as well as identifiably Jewish individuals, as well as a culture where it seems that using anti-Semitism in a variety of ways, sometimes explicitly about Jews, but sometimes implicitly, where if you don't know the code, you don't actually know that like anti-Semitism is being deployed. And we're seeing that with more and more regularity.
It seems like that's actually happening almost in a kind of, I hate to say it, but commonplace political rhetoric, you know, around
yes.
like George Soros, you know, maybe this is what you're talking, like George Soros, like George Soros funded, which is almost like code for Jewish.
Absolutely.
And that's not like really super fringy anymore.
Yes.
But I think what you're saying is really important for all of us to remember around like how we get statistics is statistics have to be gathered from people who feel confident enough to talk about what happened to them. And I think this goes across the board where people are like, oh, that's not worth me talking. I remember hearing someone say, oh, I just got yelled at because like people called me a terrible Jewish name. And I was like, oh, are you going to report it? They were like, oh, no, you know. And I was like,
sure,
why not? You know, and they were just like, that's just not, I didn't get hurt. And I'm
sure.
Like, okay. You know, so I just think that it's really important that whatever numbers are coming out, even how bad they are not reflecting the full story of the experience of Jewish people in this country in 2022.
Sure. Sure. And it's also, it's important not to talk about anti-Jewish bigotry in isolation from other groups that are targeted by hate, as well as, you know, the fact that many Jews have intersecting identities, right? So if we look at anti-Black racism and, you know, what kind of daily experiences of racism, whether remarks or whether things that are more structural, like those don't get reported in hate crimes data. Right? They often show up in health data in terms of higher rates of hypertension and all the physical health impacts that people deal with when you're dealing with bigotry each and every day. And so I think it's really important to also, you mentioned, you know, the George Soros pieces, to acknowledge the political context in which this is taking place. That we have experienced in the past 6 years or so ideas that were once confined to the fringes of the far right that are now commonplace. So you mentioned George Soros, that trope of the shadowy, wealthy Jew who's pulling the strings behind people. You know, it was deployed during the Kavanaugh hearings when people were, you know, speaking out. People said, oh, well, those were just George Soros-funded groups. It was deployed to deadly effect in the lead up to the 2018 midterm elections, when far right, and not even so far right, figures on Fox News, but also in Congress, also from the White House, were trying to mobilize their base by whipping up a hysteria. You may remember about the caravan. There's a caravan of migrants, and it's an invasion. And there was a lot about George Soros funding this, as if people who are trying to get a better life and fleeing to this country for safety would need to be manipulated in order to do that. You know, it's just absurd on its face, which culminated in the deadliest anti-Semitic massacre in American history, which was at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh. There is a straight line between that political rhetoric and the violence.
Yeah, I there's an incident in my own family that which you may or may not have heard about, which is the Goldmark affair. He was a rancher in Eastern Washington in the 60s, and he got targeted for being a communist. Mm-hmm. And he was also like had the Goldmark name. He was technically not Jewish, but it was Jewish communism. So he got attacked politically and really, really, really. And he won the libel suit, but it remained in the air. And then 20 years later, one of his sons was killed with his family in Seattle because the guy said, this is a communist Jewish plot.
Right.
So like these words, these tropes have real meaning for people, and real violence and death can happen. So I just think like the stakes that we're dealing with are high and they linger, and it's like it's fester, and we just need to make clear. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about what Bend the Arc and you and your all the people you work with, which includes a wonderful set of people across groups, but how you feel like we can all be mobilized in this way, and what kind of resources do you have at Bend the Arc that might be helpful for people?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And just one thing I wanted to say to follow up on the point that you just made, what a horrific story, Paul, is that those kind of attacks, especially with political valence that have their roots in anti-Semitism, don't just affect Jews and don't just harm Jews. They harm the whole society and the whole political culture. The Red Scare, certainly a terrible chapter in American history, you know, was animated by anti-Semitism. The QAnon.
This was completely connected with the Red Scare, the story I just told about my family.
Exactly.
That was a Red Scare story that kept on echoing. So we're still feeling the effects of the Red Scare. And you're talking about QAnon, which is
QAnon,
a manifestation.
Similar thing, and which inspired, you know, the violence of January 6th. So these things don't just get isolated to a particular community that's under attack. It infects the whole culture. And that's how Bend the Arc is working to address anti-Semitism, is that we understand that it would be a mistake to just examine anti-Semitism on its own in isolation without understanding the broader political context and also the broader context of who all is being targeted. What we understand is that we're being targeted by a white nationalist movement that has its roots in sort of classic white supremacy, but is, you know, built for this particular moment, and that we are one of many targets of the white nationalist movement. What we just saw in Colorado Springs, what we saw in Buffalo last year, you know, what we unfortunately see over and over again, it's all part of the same violent political movement. Often people react to these horrific acts of violence and chalk it up to mental health, which, you know, is frankly offensive to people who are experiencing real mental health issues. This is about a political movement that has its roots in violence. So one of the things that we do is our work around hate crimes and around advocacy is always done in solidarity with other groups that are under attack. When the Biden administration had just been elected and during the transition, we made a series of recommendations to the incoming administration together with Muslim advocates and the Arab American Institute to make clear that we want solutions that will make a real impact and reduce the harm in all of the communities that are under attack.
Right. I mean, if we look at the last, as you said, 6 years or so, you know, the rise in vandalism and attacks on synagogues is paralleled with the rise in vandalism and attacks in mosques. It's not merely a coincidence that that's happening at the same time. And it's
Correct.
Really, so I think that this, you know, this is so helpful. And I think one of the things that is very difficult, this is where it gets really hard. And I, you know, I only say this to you because I know that like you're able to help us think through this is like, what is the connection or not connection between criticisms of Israel and anti-Semitism? You know, I say that as someone who comes
Sure.
from a family that is a strong supporter of Israel, but also recognizes, I also feel that being able to criticize Israel is extremely important. So I think that I'm tiptoeing into this
Sure.
because it's the landmine that we have a really hard time talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll just say, you know, beforehand is that Bend the Arc as an organization works, you know, only on domestic issues. So we're
well, you know, that's the same with Interfaith Alliance.
And,
we're both very quick to say that.
Yeah. And you know, I'll just say as you know, as a rabbi and as a Jew, it is absolutely the case that criticism of any country and harsh criticism of any country's actions is not ipso facto bigotry, right? I think we can all agree about that. I do think that there are times when criticism can be deployed in ways that implement anti-Semitism, that kind of pick up on those things, and those instances should be condemned and often are. I think that there are often forces on the right inside the Jewish community that don't want to see any criticism. And some of that is an explicit political platform of like, you know, I have a right-wing ideology and this is a way of deflecting. And there are also some for whom harsh criticism is very emotional. For many, many Jews, Israel feel, you know, people have a, you know, maybe it has a real emotional connection. And so to feel like, you know, there's harsh criticism taking place, it's often hard to distinguish between I'm feeling like really uncomfortable and emotionally unsafe and like bigotry is actually being deployed in this way. But it's absolutely the case that to blame Jews for the actions of a government or to assume, you know, assume the political beliefs of a person just because they are Jewish or where, you know, or identifiably Jewish. That's not okay.
Yeah. Thank you. That's a really helpful delineation. And I understand that Bend the Arc, like Interfaith Alliance, is a domestic organization and it really works on domestic issues. So I appreciate you going into that. I do think it comes up a lot when we talk about anti-Semitism. And so it's
absolutely
the way you went into that and also talked about the emotion of it, because like that's like also really at play here. And it's just really helpful. So going forward, like let's say that we all deploy. What would be a way that we can feel that we have been able to, you know, honestly, anti-Semitism has been happening for so many millennia that it's almost impossible to imagine it going away. But what would you hope for over the next 4 years that would feel like the Jewish community can say, okay, we met that challenge, not just the Jewish community, the American community met that challenge? Like, how would you like to see us be able to reflect on the last 4 years if we're thinking about maybe 2025 or 2026?
The first thing I would say is I think it's important for us not to get into a framework where we feel like anti-Semitism or any specific form of bigotry is inevitable and will always be here and always come back. Anti-Semitism is it's a system, just like white supremacy, that has been built by people for their own reasons and can be dismantled. And so it's not part of the natural world. There is no, you know, this is a system that was developed for specific reasons and at different times that is to the benefit of actors who are trying to use it, including in this political moment. So I think, like, I want to say that from the beginning. And so what needs to be done is we need to work together to dismantle it. And the way we're going to dismantle it is not by isolating anti-Semitism, but by dismantling the bigotries that are at the core of our society, American society, and going back, you know, we're part of Western society in general. I think in American society, we need to spend way more energy than we're spending right now thinking about anti-Black racism and how we deconstruct it. As long as anti-Black racism is such a core part of our culture and our systems, no group is safe. So I think that the more that all the targets of hate, whether it's Black, Latino, people with disabilities, LGBTQ community, the Jewish community, and, you know, it's important to say those aren't separate communities, they're all overlapping, right. Really need to continue to build a movement that has like an irresistible vision of a society where we can all fully thrive and be ourselves, right? And like, I think this is where, to me, the religious work comes in, because what we're talking about is building, you know, in my language as a rabbi, building a society that recognizes that we're all B'Tselem Elohim, that we're all created in the image of God, and that we have infinite worth and value and dignity to be fully ourselves. Like that's the charge. And I know that that's kind of big and may feel amorphous, but the way we do that, you know, in the next 4 years is to get out of the mode of talking about each of these things in isolation, to get out of the mode of saying, well, you know, it's coming from everywhere. I think there's a both sides thing happening that says like, oh, we see these things like on the right and on the left. Well, yes, that's true. Just like we see anti-Black racism, you know, in progressive spaces as well as, and sexism, you know, in progressive spaces as well as in right-wing spaces. But we have to recognize, wait, who's benefiting from those hates? Who gets stronger when those bigotries get mainstreamed, and who gets weaker? And who gets stronger are the people and the politicians who get their power from fear and division.
Yeah.
And so the way to overcome fear and division is it's to be more in solidarity with each other. Yeah,
I really like the hopeful vision. You know, I say frequently on this program, referencing the Baldwin, achieving our country, that like either we can decide it's not possible or it's possible. And the only way that we're going to make it possible is when people come together to dedicate themselves to achieving our country. So I think it's really like a great vision. I wonder if we're getting close to Hanukkah, and I wonder if you would close us out with some sort of, you know, reflection on Hanukkah for this year. And if there's any sort of offering for our listeners who may be Jewish or maybe, you know, everyone needs a blessing. So do you have a Hanukkah thought or anything?
Absolutely. One of my favorite Midrashim, rabbinic stories about Hanukkah is they tell the story that when Adam, the first human being, first experienced winter, he noticed that the days were getting shorter and that the nights were getting longer. And it kept increasing and more darkness and less light. And he thought that the world was ending, right? He thought, like, this is it. I'm going to be swallowed up by the darkness and creation is unraveling and we're going to go back to chaos. He prayed. I'm trying to remember whether he lit candles at that moment. And the solstice came, of course, and then the days started getting longer and things started kind of moving in reverse. And he realized that, oh, this is just how the world works. We have cycles of increasing darkness and then increasing light. And the rabbis identify that as sort of the primordial roots of Hanukkah. So that's what I think about, is like, there's so many reasons to despair. There's so many times where we feel like, gosh, things are just going in a horrible direction, either for our society or maybe in my personal life. And just that act of like lighting candles, increasing candles. And we see that in Christmas too, right? Like, I love when although people like put up their lights everywhere. To me, it's just a great act of faith in a way of like assurance that, you know, there's going to be light again. And like, here's where we are. And, you know, we're going to move back to something better.
Rabbi, thank you so much for joining me on State of Belief and for all your wisdom that you've shared today. I look forward to having you back on the show.
Thanks so much, Paul. It's been a real pleasure.